Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 16th, 2012, and you're listening to the best poker podcast ever recorded on Coco Cay, Bahamas. I'm Scott Long, and Chris Cosenza is nowhere around, and we're very excited about that. But we are on our Ante-Up Poker Cruise, and by a great suggestion from one of today's guests, Brian Cole, we are recording on the Royal Caribbean private island of Coco Cay, so hopefully you can enjoy the seagulls and the ugly Americans and everything else in the background. But we're going to be talking about some fun stuff going on in poker, not so much about the cruise today, and we have three of our longtime listeners joining us. Martha Thietza Patella, Brian Vic Guru Cole, and John Poker Geek MN Somsky. Thank you guys all for spending some time on this very terribly sunny day.
No problem.
Glad to be here.
Me too.
And Martha, I love it. I have my beer, of course. Martha has hers, and she's drinking out of what it looks like a Corona Light funnel. I have no idea who came up with this idea, but I want to have one. All right, well, there's a lot of exciting stuff going on in the places where our three guests live today. And so, Martha, we're going to start with you. Obviously, you live in Long Island, and we've all been watching TV and seeing this devastating superstorm, Sandy. And I guess the good thing is you're here with us. It sounds like all your stuff is safe, so we're very happy to hear that, right? Obviously, not the same for everybody else that lives up there. But let's talk a little bit about, since it's a poker show, about Atlantic City. I know you get down there a couple times a year, play at the Borgata, right?
Yeah. It's closed down.
Yeah, this is one of the, I believe, but only the third or fourth time they've ever shut down the casinos there. And they opened them up actually relatively quickly, I thought.
Pretty quick. I think on Thursday after the storm, they opened up.
So let me ask you this. I was talking to some people before we got on the ship. Obviously, you know, if anybody's been to Atlantic City, they know it's casinos are the lifeblood of that area. So obviously trying to get them open very quickly is very important. But I've also talked to people that feel a little, what's the word, not real comfortable driving down, hey, let's go play poker in Atlantic City, when they know half the city is destroyed and reeling from this storm. Any people that you know have talked about that, or is that...
Actually, the people that I know, people from Long Island that took refuge once they opened up, that they took their families to Borgata.
Did they?
Because they couldn't stay home, and they didn't want their kids to see the devastation. And I guess, you know, once you're inside, you're not seeing what's outside anyway.
That's true.
But no, nobody said anything to me about that at all. I would have loved to have gone down there just to get away from it all, but it's horrible. I mean, Jersey got hit really, really badly, and the whole shores of Long Island got decimated. So I can tell you that I was surprised within a day and a half, the Long Island local underground clubs were open, up and running. Because I was sitting in a Walgreens parking lot getting Wi-Fi to watch the news to see what's going on, and I get these text messages saying, we are open, we have power, we have showers, you know, come on down, come play poker. And I'm like, these people have to, you know, clean up. But
well, that's interesting, though, because obviously we live in Florida, so we get hit by 678 hurricanes a year. And there is something to be said about trying to get back to normal as quickly as possible and at least taking your mind off everything, isn't there?
Yeah.
All right, Brian, let's turn to you. You live, do you actually live in Maryland or in Baltimore area?
I live in Virginia, just
Virginia?
Outside of D.C.
All right, very close to outside of D.C. And just a week ago, voters in Maryland voted to allow table games and poker in some of the existing casinos there, and then allowed to build another one. And it's probably going to drastically change the poker market up there, from at least the folks I've talked to. Is that the sense that you have?
like stuff. They were commercial and everything. And if you get away from the person, you can throw a bottle on me or for this poker, either for it or not for poker, but table games. And you can gamble the person with money for school, but not really for the schools. But it passed by a small margin, and I haven't really been keeping track of it. But people on the ship have said that they're thinking the existing casinos will get poker as soon as March or April next year. It'd be interesting. The closest one to me, I mean, right now, we're really, if you're inside D.C. proper, Charlestown, West Virginia is the closest. I'm a little bit, it takes me maybe an hour 15 to get there. And there's one in Arundel Mills near Columbia, Maryland, and that would take me maybe 45 minutes to get to. They're talking about the sixth one being in, what's it called? Just on the D.C. Beltway at about 5 o'clock. National Harbor, it's called. And that would be maybe 25 minutes from my house, if and when it opens. So, yeah, I mean, I haven't been to Charlestown in more than a year because, I've been busy. And if I can get someplace 25 minutes, I'm doing that way more often.
Me too.
And that was one of the things that I was talking about people on the ship too, and our listeners, this group actually took out from Baltimore, so is that what I always like to watch, being a poker magazine publisher, is whether the new casinos, wherever they are, actually grow the poker market and get more people into the game. Are they just cannibalizing the rooms that are already there and taking players away? Because to me, that's not a win. They're just taking players away from Dover Downs or Charlestown or Harrington or any of those. So that's what I'll be watching to see whether they actually go to the market. But I understand that 70% of those players are from Maryland. That's what someone told me on this trip.
The players are in the car.
That right now they're going to Delaware, the Delaware rooms. I don't know about Charleston, but
yeah, I believe it. I mean, I've been to a lot of people from D.C. or from Maryland over there.
I don't think the Hawks are, I don't think Pennsylvania or D.C. I mean, Borgata, the last event that I was at, was 3,500 entries to a 500 entry event.
Right.
I think it also makes a difference if the rooms are close together. And it's like Brian said, he'll go to a room a lot more often if it's 25 minutes away. So opening one that's 2 hours away from your nearest competitor is a big difference from opening one across the street.
Just check.
Yeah, so for me, I'll be growing because instead of going, you know, rarely, once every 6 months or once every 4 months, I'll be going maybe once a month, twice a month. I mean, we'll see how.
Would you still be going once every 6 months to the other place? It's not going to take you away from there.
I mean, I haven't been there more than a year. I would guess even if they open, I'll go there once in a year. Just to see how things have changed.
But even if you don't, I mean, you're right, you're still growing the market because you're going to be playing poker more than you are now.
But obviously,
that's a good thing.
Obviously, the Charlestown people are afraid of cannibalization because they spend lots and lots of money trying to defeat this ballot measure in Maryland. So they wouldn't be doing that if they didn't think it was going to work.
And a little bit of competition, of course, is good as well. I know if for Minnesota here, the tournament structures and everything at Canterbury Park have gotten much better since Running Aces opened up, and we have two large rooms.
Competitors,
sure. And they're still an hour apart from each other, so they draw different crowds, but they still have some level of competition.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Competition is for good. Us.
So maybe Charlestown offers better comps now. You know, maybe if they do something to get me there, I'll go there. You know, so maybe it'll be good for poker.
Yeah. Well, definitely be better for players, I think. So. All right, well, John, good segue, because it's still several months away, but we're very excited, and I know you're very excited that we're having an Annie Up Poker Tour event up at Running Aces. That's the room you play in most often, correct?
Yes, it is. That one is 15 minutes from my house. Therefore, it makes it easy for me to get there quite often.
And we're real excited that they're real excited to have an event, and I'm looking forward to getting up there myself. And just give our listeners a little preview of what they can expect at Running Aces in general, and what you think maybe the tour is going to do for that room.
Well, so Minnesota doesn't allow full-fledged casinos in its poker rooms. What they have is there are some Native American casinos in the area, but the largest card rooms are are pari-mutuel tracks. They have horse racing. So Canterbury Park does thoroughbred racing. Running Aces does harness racing. And then they also allow a selection of table games, blackjack, Caribbean stud, I'm not sure what all, and as well as poker. So both rooms have a fairly large number of tables. Running Aces has about 30 poker tables, maybe a little bit more. And then they also have an atrium where they can set up more tables for tournament series. And Tristan and DJ are the tournament directors there, and they are really excited to have the NEUP event there. They're hoping to get, you know, break some records as far as field size for that level of a buy-in of the event. So it's going to be real exciting. I'll be happy to actually be able to, you know, being a longtime NEUP supporter, being able to go there to my local casino and support an NEUP event.
Excellent.
So when is this happening?
Go ahead.
The event, well, you know better than I do, it's sometime in April, right?
Yeah, the main event's April 19th to 21st, and they just sent me an email this week saying the actual dates will be April 13th to 21st. I imagine there's going to be some lead-up events. I definitely know a lot of satellites and things like that, so April was probably a good time to be in Minnesota, right?
Yeah. Starting to get a little warm.
Need to wear my jacket out too.
Well, you definitely need to wear your jacket. And April, we actually is well, March is our snowiest month traditionally. Doesn't last long. Normally, by that time in April, there's not going to be snow out on the grounds. Still, I see some clumps up in the parking lots, but it'll be fairly decent. But one thing I should mention too is Running Aces has a fantastic structure. So it's a very slow structure. They used it during the Midwest Poker Classic, and they're going to be repeating it for using that same structure for the NEUP event. And it gives players a lot of play. I mean, here they don't skip any of the levels. Start at 2550, and then I don't know what the chips is going to be.
I say it was 15,000, I think.
Okay.
With all the add-ons, I could be wrong, but I think that's bad.
Yeah, and
great start times too. I mean, the day 1A, it's not on a Friday, starts at 5 o'clock, so folks don't have to take the entire day off of work.
Right. Right. And they do a great job with their structures and their events there, so it'll be a lot of fun.
All right, and we just concluded the World Series a couple weeks ago. We have a new champion, and Chris and I waxed on way too long about this on a recent PokerCast, but we got a lot of feedback from our comments, so I thought I would take this opportunity since we have, you know, three folks here to kind of pick your brains on what you thought. First of all, did any of you watch any of the coverage, and if so, what did you think of it?
I was very, very excited to watch it. And then my power went out, and I never got to see any of it.
We won't tell you who won. We won't spoil it for you.
I know who won. I know I got everything.
Well, I have seen virtually none. I've seen maybe 15 minutes here and there. But I have a DVR with about, I think, you know, 18 hours. I have, you know, when they first started airing on the Tuesday nights months ago, I still have those. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm going to watch them. You know, I've got a lot of stuff on my DVR, and I try to watch it before it gets pushed off the end by new stuff.
Well, that's interesting, because at our home game a couple weeks ago, we had some people that had DVR'd almost all of it, too. And they actually hadn't heard who won yet, so we spoiled that for them. But, but they were talking about the fact that, I mean, the DVR was pretty clogged. I mean, they taped the entire final table to main event, which was...
Oh, I did.
You know, 12, 13 hours or something, and so they had to make some decisions on what else to be deleting off the DVR.
Yeah, but that's not what I didn't record that. I recorded the processed stuff. I didn't even know about that until I heard about it on the podcast. So I may have watched that. And people said that the players were acting really slowly, so I don't know if I would have, you know, how much interest I would have had.
Yeah.
You tape it as a 2-hour event. So every time you watch 2 hours, you can delete it instead of taping the entire thing, which is what I had planned on doing.
But I don't know why I haven't watched it. So in previous years, I'll watch it, and then usually by the time the next Tuesday comes around, or Wednesday, or whenever they shift it to, I would try to find time to watch it. But this year I haven't, and I don't know if it's because I care less. I mean, I'm playing less live poker also, so maybe other parts of my life are more busy, or maybe I've become used to it, or I don't know.
John?
Well, you know, I can't talk about this year's World Series without saying, stating the fact that, you know, my brother, he played the main event and he was on the feature table. So much of my time was devoted to rewinding the particular episode he was on and saying, oh, there's my elbow. Oh, I see a hand. There's my dad's mustache. You know, all around the background as I was watching it. So I watched religiously up through where he was on the final table. And after that, I kind of fell behind, but I did catch up eventually. And I did make sure that I finished watching the final table. I actually recorded part of it. I wasn't able to get the entire three-handed event on my DVR. I didn't record enough, so I had to watch it on ESPN3.
Which I can't get. It was very...
Yeah, I have Comcast, yeah, so that's one of the things you can get through it.
I really liked the live streaming last year.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I thought that was great. It's boring, yes, but I loved it. I loved the commentary. I just liked watching it live. And I don't like this break. I think that people forget about it. You could care less. Mm-hmm. By November, I'm done. I've gone to other things.
I think it really depends, though. I mean, it's a little bit looking at it results-oriented. If either of the two women had made it to the final table, I think there would have been a tremendous buzz. And I don't think anyone would be saying, is it time to kill the November 9 or the delay?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Or, you know, the year that Ivy made it or when Reiner made it.
Right.
So...
Three months is a long time.
Agreed. But then again, so let's say you're not going to do the 3 months. The reason they do it that way is so you get in your live presentation. And if you don't do the 3 months, what are you going to cut out leading up to it? I mean, the coverage is already short. I give my brother a hard time that they showed him folding every single hand at that table. Well, he didn't. He played some hands, but they only have a handful of hands they can show during those 2 hours. So you either need to cut out more coverage of the lead up to it, which they could, but I kind of enjoy seeing that. That way you make sure you see a wide variety of players. That's one of the differences between that and the traditional,
I also missed,
you know,
the early stages. Day one, day two, just getting. I missed that.
Right.
They used to do that.
I missed, you know, covering Omaha. I must be one of the few because
I like to see Omaha and Stud and the other events as well.
But that's long gone.
Six card hold'em. We'll talk about that a little later on the show, but. Yeah, I'm curious what has your brother mentioned to you what his thoughts are on the November 9, that whole concept? Obviously he played, so would he have preferred to have come back a couple months later?
I have a feeling he wouldn't have minded it. after those 4 days, so this is the first 4-day event he's played in, a 7-day. He's played in 2-day events before, but nothing longer than that. And he was exhausted. I was exhausted, and I wasn't even playing. But just getting up, you know, I'd make him breakfast in the morning, go watch him all day play, walk around the World Series, see who I could snap photos of. And I was just exhausted by the time. He was exhausted by the end of day four.
Don't they play just a certain amount of hours? Like just 8 hours?
They do. Well, it's closer to like 12 hours of the year there. So it started at noon. So, and I don't know, I found it exhausting. I think he would have been ready for a break to be refreshed and rejuvenated. Also, he's not as experienced. I mean, he's a good player, but the extra kind of stuff he can show up to the coach or something like that.
He's supposed to be not only two or three of the coaches.
Or at least say they got coaches.
I'd be worried about somebody messing me up.
Learning something new that
yes, exactly.
Really,
I mean, obviously, I would have no business getting there in the first place, but if I would have gotten there, I must have got there somehow. And then for someone to reprogram me in 3 months, I would feel like.
I think somebody who is the same, who thinks the same way you do, and is just going to enhance what you have.
I guess the way I look at it is there's lots of little. I know I make a lot of fundamental mistakes that I don't know I'm making. You know, when it's time to push fold, when you get down to that, I kind of know the general ranges, but owning up on that, or thinking better about, you know, you probably shouldn't open your stacks too short, and you really can't afford to, if you're going to play the hand, you got to be committed.
Right.
Those types of things, so that you can avoid making those mistakes. I still kick myself and make a ton of them, but I don't realize until like 2 or 3 hands later, oh, that was a stupid move back there. So
does change the game to have a gap.
Right.
So, you have these 9 people, you stop, and if you want, all 9 of them can study on each other. And it's sort of like having a marathon, going 25 miles, taking a sleep overnight, and then running the last mile the next day. You know, it changes the...
That's a good analogy.
It changes the game a little bit. I would fear, I don't know, I would be, if I were somehow one of the members, I would have to. I'd be worried that other people would be learning more than I had managed. Then again, I might be exhausted and want to sleep.
That momentum changes, too. But you get rested, so.
All right, let's shift gears a little bit here, because I know all 3 of you enjoyed playing online when we could, and still, to some degree, enjoy playing online. I mean, John runs Papes for us, so we appreciate that. How has the absence of what we like to call real online poker affected you guys in the last year and a half or a little bit more now?
Not me at all.
Not at all?
Didn't play before?
Very little. I enjoy the live experience much more. I get very distracted when I play online.
I think we might say that you get kind of distracted playing live too, Martha.
You think?
No, I miss it a little bit. I don't wake up wishing it were there. But I would used to, you know, after the kid went to sleep, I would say, oh, okay, I'll play a $5 sit and go. You know, take an hour, 45 minutes, or however long it would take before I go to sleep, too. And I enjoyed that. But now that I don't do that, I find other things to do. When it comes back, I'll start playing again. But I was never huge on it.
John, probably more huge for you.
Right. Yeah, I played quite a bit. And to talk about my brother yet again. I mean, he was on track to making a considerable side income playing online. And he was a stake through a couple of pros, and he was looking at, you know, the dream, whether it be real or not, realistic or not, was maybe eventually go pro or something like that, or semi-pro. And it was getting to the point where he was going to make some real money doing it. I mean, I've made money, but, you know, pocket change. For me, I enjoyed just the variety. I liked playing everything, the Doogie, Deuce to Seven. I loved playing Apes. That was the only thing I ever, that was scheduled poker. I made sure I didn't miss that. And I miss it. Papes works out. It fills the void, but there are still a number of players who don't want to play for free.
Right.
You know, and there is a difference, I think. The good thing is the people who play in Papes are not the average run-of-the-mill people, so they take it seriously. And with it being a tournament situation, I think it's easier to play a tournament for money, because you're still trying to win, and there's still something you're playing for, versus cash games where they're meaningless points if it's for play money.
Yeah, the play money I use to learn a game.
For me, the other thing I think, I really... honestly believe that online poker is the feeder system.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we don't get online poker back in 10 or 15 years, the live poker scene is going to start to die out, because that's where you get people comfortable. I never would have set foot in a real casino and played a game of poker had I not gotten comfortable playing casino style poker online. And
for 5
I was
cents,
even
10 cents or something like that.
Right. Well, and it didn't even matter if I was playing for money or not. It was just learning the rules properly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had been playing since the 80s, home games, but we played, you know, 7-card stud. We played wild card sometimes, 5-card draw, and it was just a very different game. I had played Hold'em, and I'd played a little bit of Omaha, but very, very little, and we were playing spread limit. It was a different style than casino style games. So I think that online poker is a very important part of the overall poker ecology. And if we don't get that back, everyone's going to suffer, whether you play online or not.
Okay.
you're certainly right about the variety. You know, the poker rooms I go to, you know, what are you spreading? Well, we got 1-2-0 limit, and that's about it. And so it used to be you could play anything you wanted online, and now, I mean, you can for play money, but now, you know, you've got to go on any other poker cruise if you want to play a weird game. Or not even a standard.
Yes, actually, I do want to talk about this. I didn't get the pleasure of playing it, but I don't even know how it got started, but I did hear that there was some six-card hold'em.
It was
played on the cruise a couple days ago.
It was a mixed game.
Okay.
It was 3-6, Omaha, high low, and then 3-6, six card hold.
And I believe the quote from my poker room manager was, never again. And you know it's a bad game for the house when the dealers get excited that it's the Omaha round. But that being said, it sounded like people really enjoyed it. There's some people, a little buzz going on.
I thought it was
a lot of fun. It was fun. It was fun.
I don't think you could ever do it at a real casino because it would be too easy to detect. Like, it would be hard to detect players who are cheating by switching their set hands to reset them. But, you know, I think I don't know, maybe someone was cheating on our table, but I doubt it.
No, it's definitely a great home game. Absolutely a great home game. Because people won't get bored. It's fun. I enjoy it immensely.
Now, obviously, you guys played at Limit, which is what we played in our home game. But I think our listener that suggested it to us said they play at No Limit. Martha's shaking her head.
I mean, I'd have to try it to see, but I think it would be difficult to play No Limit.
I think it would take some of the joy and the decision-making out of it for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I know in a Limit game, I know I've got a good shot of getting to the point where I'm throwing away the first hand and maybe even the second hand. And that's the real enjoyment of the game, I think. Whereas No Limit, I could see someone going all in pre-flop or on the flop and having to fold and almost becoming more frustrating at that point.
Yeah. I almost think it'd be a better pot limit game. I mean, similar to the way Omaha's pot limit, if you were going to play a big bet game.
Well, obviously, everyone who's playing at that table was playing it for the first time. And we hadn't quite figured out how to play it yet. So pretty much everyone was in until the flop, which isn't how it should be. And pretty much, you know, usually even at the showdown, there were a couple people. I would guess, you know, if we got better at it, if we got used to it, people would be betting pre-flop and pushing people out. And certainly if it were pot limit or no limit, that would happen even more.
Well, in general, the axiom is the more cards you get, the tighter you should play. So, you know, in Omaha, you're supposed to play tighter than you are in Hold'em, although many people don't. And I would think in six-card Hold'em, you should play tighter yet, particularly if it was going to be a big bet game.
Yeah.
All right, and we'll wrap it up here just by thoughts on the cruise. You guys have all, you're all multiple NTO. At least two. Maybe been on more than two. Mars has been on three. That's
three.
Right.
We've been on three at the same time.
That's right. Exactly. Excellent.
New York next.
This one was a little different out of Baltimore. A little different crowd. But just thoughts on the cruise experience in general for folks that haven't done it before.
I love it. I travel by myself, so I love it. I love the poker. I love the cruises. I love the free food.
But
I
even
love
if
the shows.
Even if you're not traveling by yourself, right? So let's say you have one poker player in the family and the others don't play poker. Well, there's a whole cruise ship for them to go on, right? They can go to the trivia, they can go to the pools, they can, you know, watch the shows. You know, there's a whole ship of people to entertain them.
Right. So my wife isn't a poker player, and this works out well for her. I make sure that we spend some time together, and I tear myself away from the poker table occasionally. But there's still plenty of things for her to do. On the ship while I'm playing poker. So it works out really well. And I think one of the things you mentioned about the six-card hold'em follows through to the cruise poker. It's different than playing in the casino.
Much different.
It's closer to a home game than it is to a casino.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot more easy, a lot more fun to be relaxed. I've never gone to a casino where here we do the little button game.
Yeah.
When the button comes around to you, you put a dollar on the button, and that's a tip for the dealer. And that keeps on moving around, and it's optional. You don't have to do it, so Chris wouldn't have to do it. but Scott would do it, and I would do it. And when the whoever has the button wins the hand, the dealer gets the chips that are on top of the button. And it's just a fun way to keep them invested in the game. They're having more fun. We're having more fun.
It's fun.
It's a relaxed atmosphere. And that goes for the entire ship, too. I mean, the shipboard activities are very similar to that. People are on vacation.
Well, excellent. I appreciate you guys taking some time out of your vacation to be on the show. And everybody at home, we'll be back next week with Chris. My apologies. And our regular show, and probably even more about the cruise then. But until then, I'm Scott Long, and we'll see you at the table.
Bye, Chris.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.